The Vegas Golden Knights took game one of the Stanley Cup final, but can the Florida Panthers bounce back? We look at both teams' strategies moving ahead, plus the Pittsburgh Penguins hire Kyle Dubas, but what is that going to mean for the franchise? All that and more on today's Locked On NHL podcast.
Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome, everybody, to the Monday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I want to thank everyone for making Locked On NHL your first listen every day. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast to get new episodes as soon as they drop. And you can now also hear us on SiriusXM on the SXM app. Just search for Locked On NHL. It is my pleasure to welcome back to the show Chris Golic of Locked On VGK. Chris, one down, three to go in the Stanley Cup final. Your thoughts after winning game one? It wasn't easy, but they got it done.
No, I mean, listen, Vegas is such a great place for the final. It's a party. They had some guy named Marshmallow outside, some big DJ wears a bucket on his head. Who would have knew that's a thing these days? But all the people liked it, so that's how the day started. And people everywhere, festive mood. A different feeling, though, than the first time the Vegas Golden Knights qualified for the Stanley Cup final. There's more of a business mentality of we've been here before type of thing going on, which is a very odd thing for a team just 6 years into its lifespan. To the game, yeah, I mean, it's a win. And it's not much more than that, though. I'm going to give Florida a little more credit than I did Edmonton and Dallas. So I thought after game one, VGK had other gears to shift to, whereas we got a peak performance out of Edmonton and Dallas in those first few games of the series. And this series, I don't think it's necessarily the talent gap is not as far. And it shouldn't be, right? These are the two conference champions. Florida hit a lot of posts yesterday. They hit a lot of posts. Aiden Hill stops a breakaway. He has that just immaculate stick save in the second period. And just, I mean, so many things had to line up for Vegas to get that victory. And most importantly, they did.
Couple of goals from defensemen. Were you surprised by that?
I mean, Shea Theodore, he has that ability. Shea Theodore, he's been relatively absent for the playoffs on the scoring side, where he's done much better historically. He does have the ability to beat five guys on the ice when he puts his head to it. It doesn't happen every time, but, I think he had the forward just leading the wrong way. And what they said in the postgame presser is he took Bobrovsky's eyes away on that shot and was able to snipe the corner. Am I surprised that Theodore is able to do that? No. The White Cloud goal, that's a little more fluky, right? You just fire the puck on net, and obviously you get a good result. It did deflect on the way in, which certainly helped. That was a little fluky, and now Vegas has 19 players this postseason that have scored at least one goal. That's the surprising part right there.
Were you surprised at the number of shots on goal both teams took in this game?
Attempted shots or, like, shots registered?
Both.
I don't feel like there's a lot of shots. That's why I'm stalling for a second here. 35 to 34. So there's a bet that I like making here locally. It's saves the goalies make in a game. And I usually like taking the over, and both goalies were sitting right at 29 and a half. So it's funny that I just look at this now. So Florida had 35 shots on goal. So 33, so over would have hit there. But here's the crazy thing. VGK scored one empty net goal, so 33 shots on goal, four goals got behind, 29. The line was 29 and a half. So Vegas knows, folks. Vegas knows. I felt the shots would be a little bit lower. I was thinking probably in the upper 20s based on the way both teams have played defense throughout the cup, especially the Florida Panthers. But, it's right on the number as far as where the odds makers felt. So I'm neither here nor there, maybe is a boring answer to your question.
Coming out of game one, obviously good to get the win, but what's your biggest concern after watching game one?
Florida, the post had a great game last night for both teams. The posts were as good as Aiden Hill and Bobrovsky were, the posts were better last night. So you have to acknowledge the fact that Florida was less than a quarter of an inch away from possibly having a different fate. And God knows we could still be playing this game if they wind up going tied, going to overtime, the way things have gone. So the biggest takeaway from the game is the teams are very close in talent. Florida, they're a physical bunch. They're I'm not going to call them goons. Not yet. That might change. After every single whistle, or even like the second they're on the ice outside of the pregame skate, and I'm surprised they didn't muck it up in the pregame skate, to be completely honest. But the second the game started, every time they're chipping at you, going to the bench for a line change, they're pushing you behind the play, whether the play is going or the play isn't going. And I'm not knocking them. I actually love this brand of hockey. They do their best to get into the heads, of their opposition. And Vegas largely didn't really take the bait. There's a video clip of Tkachuk chipping away at Mark Stone, who, oddly enough, Mark Stone and Matt Tkachuk will be standing in Brady's wedding, in Matt's brother, Brady Tkachuk, sometime in the summer. So that's probably just weeks away. So that's going to get a bit awkward depending on how this goes. But, you know, point being is, again, long-winded answer longer here. Florida's going to try and take Vegas out of their game. If Vegas can stay within their game and avoid the shenanigans, for lack of a better term, I think it's going to give them a big advantage for up to the next six games.
And after game one, are there any key players on Vegas that you think, you know, if these guys do their job, this team will win the Stanley Cup?
I mean, listen, Aiden Hill, that's a chalk answer. That's easy. That's boring. William Karlsson, I think, is important to the series. You look at the fact that, and I actually asked William Karlsson about this at Media Day, and he didn't give me much, though. I asked William Karlsson what it was like hearing Edmonton Oilers coach Jay Woodcroft telling the media that he is keeping Connor McDavid off the ice when you are out there. And Karlsson didn't really take much. He didn't take the bait. I didn't expect him to say much, but, you know, it was, I guess I did something right. And that was really all I got out of him. But William Karlsson really needs to neutralize Matt Tkachuk. And I think that is a matchup to keep an eye on as the series progresses. Zach Whitecloud, quietly, his plus minus is just way up there. Obviously, he had the goal, but he does so many just kind of small things. I mean, our bottom two defensemen is a top four defenseman in any other team pretty much in the NHL. That's how deep the Vegas defensive core is. On the other side of the puck, I think Mark Stone. Mark Stone had a very strong game. Obviously, the apparently controversial goal, which wasn't controversial at all if you actually read the rules. A lot of people failed to read the rules and how a high stick works. So real fast, folks, if you're questioning the Mark Stone goal, here he comes. The rule is written: if you play the puck above your shoulder in a normal stance, it's a high stick. What people don't acknowledge, Mark Stone's blade was like this, like his skate blades. So he was digging into the ice about 3 or 4 inches down. It wasn't close to a high stick, but Mark Stone's important, and Jack Eichel did what he does. He's creating space. He's creating time, feeding the puck to positive places simply by some strong board play. And we're going to hear a lot. Eichel did get one assist this game. We're going to hear a lot more from Jackie Aces as the series progresses.
All right, Chris, why don't you tell our viewers and our listeners where they could find the podcast and where they could find you on social media?
We are Locked On Vegas Golden Knights, anywhere you find your podcast. Also, YouTube. A lot of fun on YouTube, guys. It's nice getting the interaction from both fan bases. So definitely hit us up and subscribe on YouTube. It's a lot of fun there. I'm a TD Chris G on Twitter. That's TD like touchdown, TD Chris G.
All right, Chris, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping
by. Oh, yeah, let's go.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. For a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. Well, it's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to fit just right. So the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors. With eBay Guaranteed Fit, you can be sure every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know all the parts will fit, or your money back. Because just like in sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. And with over 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. So get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. eBay Guaranteed Fit, only available to U.S. customers. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. It is my pleasure to welcome back to the show the host of Locked On Florida Panthers, Armando Velez. And Armando, going through, you got your Heat hat, your Florida Panthers shirt. You are in finals mode all the way through. Little bit disappointing performance in game one. What didn't quite click for the Panthers?
Yeah, Gil, I want to thank you so much once again for having me on the show to talk all things Florida Panthers, and it's a great time here in South Florida. And also the Miami Marlins, they swept the Oakland A's this weekend as well. So a great time in this region once again for South Florida sports. But yeah, as far as the Florida Panthers and what went wrong in the game, I mean, really, it came down to special teams for the Panthers. Yeah, they got a shorthanded goal for their first goal of the game. But on their power play, the zone entries were just not there for the Panthers. I mean, there was also one power play specifically where the Vegas Golden Knights cleared it four times, and the Florida Panthers were not winning their key faceoffs there as well. The faceoffs actually started to tilt in the Panthers' directions about 5 minutes left in the second period. And I mean, look what happened. The Florida Panthers scored right off a faceoff with Anthony Duclair, just less than 30 seconds left in the second period. I mean, and the Florida Panthers, I mean, a few good things is that they added to that tally of goals started within the first 3 minutes of starting a period and the last 3 minutes of a period. Now that's 18 goals in the postseason for the Florida Panthers. In that 3 minute mark for them. So they added at least to that tally, and it was a game going into the third period. I mean, and it kind of broke away. Yeah. That review that happened with the Mark Stone high stick, or was it a high stick? That wasn't the reason why the Florida Panthers lost this game. And I mean, a lot of talk has been how the Vegas Golden Knights have dominated 5-on-5, but in this one specifically, yeah, you'll see a 3-1 goal differential in the, as far as the goals, but as far as shot attempts and shots for, the Panthers were there with them. It's just you wish that the Florida Panthers were getting more into the dirty areas in game one. A lot of perimeter-based shots, not a lot of opportunities for like give and goes, for like a centering feed down low to make Aiden Hill work. There were times where he was kind of being a little ambitious getting out of his net. And look what happened with that big save that he had on Nick Cousins in game one, which was incredible. Signs of Braden Holtby of 2018 for the Vegas Golden Knights against the Washington Capitals. But, you know, it was just about the Vegas Golden Knights just taking advantage of their opportunities. And two of the goals against for the Florida Panthers, it was two screens. One of them was a double screen that Bobrovsky, the eyes were taken away from him as well on the night as well. So Bob wasn't the problem for the Panthers. I mean, and we saw one thing in game one. There was no rest for these Panthers.
As far as the that one big save, which you mentioned, do you think that was deflating for the Panthers? I mean, it was such an unbelievable save when it was made.
Yeah, it was a bit deflating at the time, but then of course the Florida Panthers were tied going into the third period. I mean, you this is a game of inches, and sometimes you think, man, how did that not go in? You think about how much differently it could have been. Yeah, but of course you still had your chances. And I mean, when you also think about with the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, the big top guns of VGK, like a Jack Eichel and an Ivan Barbashev, didn't get on the board on the night. It was the defenseman of Shades Theodore and Zach Whitecloud who were getting in on the scoring as well. So a little bit of a discouraging part in that sense of the game when it's the blue line that's scoring for the Vegas Golden Knights, when the Florida Panthers, they were second in the NHL this year in blue line scoring. I mean, and we got to talk about the elephant in the room with the scoring of the Vegas Golden Knights. Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith are the two guys who scored, with Marchessault on the power play, Riley Smith with the empty net goal against the both of them against their former teams as well. And I mean, on that penalty kill, I mean, we also got to consider that Radko Gudas was out for a little bit in that first period, which Brandon Montour was not in a familiar spot where he was on the penalty kill and just went a little bit too far to his left, leaving Jonathan Marchessault there. And it's just little itty bitty details at the Florida Panthers that I would like to see them get better. But as far as going into game two, I'm not worried about this team. I mean, the series doesn't really start until someone loses at home. And yeah, the Florida Panthers, they went 8 straight of winning on the road. And yeah, they were 8-0 when scoring first. Now they're 8-1. But they have proven over and over throughout the postseason that they will not back down, and they will always be in these close hockey games.
Did the fact that 3 misconduct penalties were called against the Panthers, does that concern you at all?
Not at all. The way I think of it is these two teams are getting a feel for each other. Yeah, Bennett and Tkachuk went out for the last few minutes. And of course that when you're down a man for 4 minutes, I mean, with a 4-2 deficit, I mean, yeah, the game is over basically at that point. Of course, when you pull the goalie, it's 5-on-5, but you know, with the net empty. So it doesn't give you that much of an opportunity to make something happen as well. But the way I see it is kind of how you approach something at the front nine, kind of like in golf. You're chatting up with your buddies, talking to one another. But as the series goes on, we're going to see less scuffles here, and kind of like in major golf, when the two guys on the leaderboard are towards the back nine, you don't see much conversation between the two. And it's kind of like the same thing here with these two. You're going to see that these two are going to be more laser focused and less of these opportunities of risking going to the box and having your team down based on what is at stake.
Should be a great series. I know you will have it covered every step of the way. Armando, why don't you tell our viewers and our listeners where they could find the podcast and where they could find you on social media?
They can find me on Twitter at MondoMan12. They can follow the show account on Twitter and Instagram at @LO_FLAPanthers. And the show, they can follow it wherever they listen to podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, YouTube, especially because we're booming on that front. And now the SiriusXM app is where you can find the Locked On Florida Panthers podcast.
All right, Armando, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you as always, Gil.
It is my pleasure to welcome back to the show the host of Locked On Penguins, Hunter Hodes. And big news out of Pittsburgh, Hunter, Kyle Dubas taking over as president of hockey operations. And according to you, he made a pretty good first impression in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty easy to win a first press conference, but I think it's pretty hard to blow away an entire fan base. That is probably the happiest I have seen Penguins fans in probably close to 6 years since they went back-to-back and beat Nashville. Other things that probably come to mind are the Flyers game in Game 6 in 2018 when Jake Gensel had 4 goals and then Jack Johnson's buyout. But everyone was just ready for someone to come in with fresh new ideas. I learned more in that press conference in those 20 minutes than I did in 2 years when Ron Hextall and Brian Burke were here. It looks like he has an actual plan of how to attack the weaknesses on this team. And the Penguins' patience paid off. You know, it was about 7 weeks ago where I think it was Mike Stevens who originally said, I'm hearing a lot of rumors that they're going to go after Dubas if he becomes available. It looked like they were close to hiring someone else until he did become available. And then it took only a couple of weeks for them to finalize this. And you know, even though he's going to be hiring a GM at some point, this is his team. He's going to be making the changes that he feels are necessary to try to get this team back to the playoffs or contending for next season.
So what is the plan as he laid it out at this press conference, and how do you think that'll affect the team going forward?
Yeah, I mean, he said his money quote that a lot of the fans loved is, you know, if you want to bet against Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and Mike Sullivan, you can go ahead and do so. So those guys are not going anywhere. I think his plan is mostly just to surround them with better talent than the last regime did. He talked about forward depth and making sure that the stars are supplemented by good players when they're not on the ice, because the Penguins were outscored pretty badly this past season when neither Crosby or Malkin were on the ice. He also talked about the goaltending situation, which I think is his biggest. And honestly, it's a big first test because Tristan Jarry is a UFA. He said he doesn't really he wants to see how he stacks up to the free agent market and the trade market. That's going to be a big decision. And he also said he wants to maybe make some changes to the back end. I don't think that's going to mean Marcus Pettersson or Letang, obviously, but I think below them, you know, with Brian Dumoulin going to free agency and, you know, maybe Jeff Petrie being on the block, Jan Ruda, I think he wants to maybe bring some of his own guys in that can really make this team a bit faster, a bit younger, and just a bit more hungrier going into next season. So that's really what I'm looking forward to for this offseason. I think you're going to see quite a bit of movement from this team, a lot more than the last regime, that's for sure.
Now, we mentioned that Dubas is not the GM, and you said he will be hiring a GM shortly. Who is being discussed as possible candidates, and do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I think I was listening to Elliot Freeman on 32 Thoughts, and he floated the idea that they want to go for someone new and fresh, someone that can be groomed into the role. And when I heard that, I immediately thought of the Colorado front office, which has Joe Sakic at the top and Chris McFarland as the GM. It was Sakic that was the GM before he was moved up, and he was kind of grooming McFarland along the way, and boom, they made that change, and McFarland kind of does the stuff, and Sakic, he oversees all hockey operations, but I'm sure is still pretty involved in the process. I think that's what eventually the Penguins want, is for Dubas is going to run this show for now, but even when he hires a GM, I should say, he's still going to be making the decisions. I think for this candidate, whoever gets the GM job, it's going to be someone who can groom into the role. Maybe someone does a salary cap and the financial stuff while Kyle is making the decisions. Names to watch. They interviewed a lot of very young people during this process. Cam Lawrence, Sam Ventura, Kate Madigan, Megan Duggan. So people like that, I would say, who have not been GMs before, I think could really be in consideration. Brandon Pridham from Toronto, he's Kyle's right-hand man there. I think he's going to get consideration. I do expect Jason Spezza to join the organization in some capacity. It's probably going to be an assistant GM. But I do think you're going to see them go for someone who's a bit more younger but can also complement Kyle, because he discussed that during his press conference. He said he wanted to hire someone who can really just – someone who can help him with his weaknesses, because he's obviously not, God's gift to earth here with being the best executive, but he wants someone who can really compliment him. And so I'm really curious to see, who he interviews, just because, again, they interviewed so many people throughout this process before they hired Kyle.
And it's interesting because Dubas himself is what, 39, 40? I mean, he's
about 37, I think.
37. Okay. So he's still a young guy. So for him to mentor someone, it almost has to be someone roughly his age or younger.
You would think so, yeah. It's definitely going to be someone who I don't think has ever been a GM before. I would not be surprised if it's people who they have interviewed before. I would probably include Matthew Darshan there because he went very far in the process. I think actually if Dubas declined the job, Darsh was going to be the president of hockey operations the way Peter LeBrun reported it, and they would have hired someone else to be the GM. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be someone who's going to be mentored. He's going to be groomed, learning the role, and then once that person has been there long enough, I think that Kyle will maybe give some of his duties over to him where he can, make the trades and the signings and all that. Because again, even when he hires a GM, this is going to be Kyle running his show. I mean, they've given him a long-term contract. I think it's 7 years. So they really want him making the decisions here.
Should be interesting to see. So based on what you know about Dubas and what you know about where the Penguins are now, what moves are you expecting to be made this offseason?
I do think his first order of business, it should be to buy out Mikhail Granlund or just get rid of him in some capacity. I don't think he's like a super really bad player. He's not like just an anchor, but 2 years of $5 million. You buy him out, you get at least $4 million off your cap. That puts you up to $24 million in cap space. I think that's a slam dunk. He talked about changes on the back end. Does that include moving on from Jeff Petrie, who makes $6.25 million for the next 2 years? That was a Ron Hextall acquisition. But if you do that, you have two top four defensemen to replace, because I don't think Brian Dumoulin is coming back. So those are a couple of options. Obviously, the goaltending situation is his biggest test. He said he's going to discuss it with Andy Kyoto and Mike Sullivan. Look at the free agent market, look at the trade market, and if Tristan is the best option, I think he'll bring him back. But still, I mean, you can't bring this tandem back for a fourth straight season. Even if they bring Tristan back, I think they'll have to trade to Smith and get a 1B goalie in there who can actually start, 35, 40, 40, something like those kind of games. So that's what I'm looking at right now. I do think you're going to see him get better forward depth. He talked about that a lot during the press conference, and he has done a really good job of that when he was in Toronto. He's got Michael Bunting, Ilya Mikheyev, David Kampf. He surrounded that core with solid two-way players who can put the puck in the back of the net and who can play defense. So that's his bread and butter, and I expect him to really attack the bottom of the lineup when free agency opens.
Should be a very interesting offseason and a pivotal offseason in Pittsburgh. I know you'll be following it every step of the way. Hunter, why don't you tell our viewers and our listeners where they could find the podcast and where they could find you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Hunter Hodes. The show's Twitter is at LOR4Penguins. You can follow the Locked On Penguins podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, and SiriusXM now, which was just a few weeks ago.
All right, Hunter, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for making Locked On NHL your first listen every day, everydayers. Tomorrow on the show, we'll have a complete rundown on Game 2 and preview the rest of the series as we keep you up to date on all the latest information about the Stanley Cup Finals. I want to thank my guests, Chris Garlick of Locked On VGK, Armando Velez of Locked On Florida Panthers, and Hunter Hodes of Locked On Penguins. I'm Gil Martin. I'm here every Monday hosting the Locked On NHL podcast, and I co-host the Friday edition along with Rachel Donner. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe, and thank you so much for listening to the Locked On NHL podcast.